Brunn woke slowly in fits and starts. It was dark. It was cold. She couldn't quite remember where she was, and when she reached for covers, she discovered that she was quite naked. The movement itself set up competing fluctuations in her head and belly. She came all the way awake in a sudden terror that slicked her cold skin with sweat. After uncountable moments of heart-pounding fear, Brunn wrestled her panic to a dead stop. She wasn't dead. She hung on to that with mental fingernails. In 20 minutes, maybe, or 2 hours, or a day, she might be dead. But not now. So now was the time she had to figure something out.
Oh, well, you wanted adventure. Oh, you could be sitting in a nice, warm, safe room surrounded by every luxury, but no.
But no time to think that either. Only time for the realities, the most basic of basics, air. She was breathing, so she must have air of a sort. She didn't even feel breathless, though her heart was pounding. That was probably fear. She wouldn't let herself call it panic. She felt around her, finding nothing at first in the darkness. Nearly zero gravity, she thought. And air, and not freezing, or she'd be dead. Her stomach wanted to crawl out her mouth, but she told it no. She'd already gagged once. Her belly was empty. Dry heaves would only waste energy. She hoped that she hadn't already compromised the ventilation system with vomit. Still, even if she had air now, she might not always. She had to get somewhere and find out where she was and how long she had. She tried to remember what she'd been taught about zero-gravity maneuvers. If you were stuck in the middle of a compartment, someone had said, who? Was her memory going too? You could put yourself into a spin and hope to bump into something. A slow spin, or you'd throw up. And how to spin? She twisted experimentally and then drew up her legs while extending her arms. Something brushed her leg. She grabbed for it, automatically. Her hand found nothing, but nausea grabbed her, proving that she'd tumbled. She flung out arms and legs both to slow the rotation and felt something brush her left elbow. Maddening. She couldn't tell what it was. Slowly, she tried to reach across with her right hand. Whatever it was slid along her arm. She was moving again. On her shoulder, down her back. It was hard not to grab, but she waited. Something linear, like a rope or length of tubing. Smooth, not rough. Cool. Her head hit a surface, hard.
Oh! Ow!
She saw sparkles in the darkness for a moment, then her vision settled. Cautiously, she moved her hand up, found the surface, knobbly with switches. Some were rocker switches, smooth curves of plastic. Others were little metal toggles. A few were round, flat buttons with incised lettering. She could feel that, but not what the letters were.
A control panel? But for what?
She tried to remember what she'd seen before everything went wrong. The image that came to her was grinning faces, mouths open, singing. A party. It had been a party, loud and happy. The rest of the memory burst over her. The ore hauler, stuffed like an egg carton with the little four-person pods. The miners had their own plans for dealing with Benignity invaders. Pharaoh had been horrified. He knew they couldn't survive a fight with the big ships. She had offered to go talk to them. He'd agreed. Then, against Pharaoh's expectation, though she had never doubted it, Harris Serrano had defeated the Benignity ships, and fleet had arrived. They were safe. The resulting celebration involved mysterious liquids far more potent than the fine wines and liquors her father served, even more potent than the illicit brews at school. The last she remembered was sinking peacefully into a bunk while a group of miners sang the 42nd verse of Down by the Bottom of the Shaft. Or perhaps the 21st verse the second time around. It had a fairly repetitious form, minor variations on the same few innuendos, and she hadn't exactly been paying close attention. Which meant she was probably in one of the personnel pods, which meant she had seen the control panels before. She didn't want to push any of the flat buttons. They were all critical. One of them, she remembered, was the airlock main control. She had drifted closer to the control panel, Her knee bumped something with an edge. The desks below or the storage shelf above, it didn't really matter. And she felt cautiously around with her foot until she was sure she had the foot hooked under that edge. She felt carefully with both hands until she had the little metal tip of a toggle pinched in either hand. Now she was anchored if she didn't lose her grip. Her feet defined down for the moment. She let the other foot wave slowly until her toes found the same edge and crawled under it. Both feet hooked in. Now she could release one hand and feel around in a more organized way. Out to the right, the switches ended in a smooth, cool surface. That made sense with her memories. Carefully, forcing herself not to rush and break loose, she moved her right hand back, caught hold of the toggle, and slid her left hand across the switches there. Should she push this switch? Any switch? Panic shook her again, as if some great beast had its jaws around her chest. Think. What would happen if she didn't? She'd be here naked in the dark until she died, and she would have no idea when that might be. Was that what she wanted? No. The first switch she pushed produced no detectable change, nor did the second. She hesitated before pushing another. If the electrical system was off, none of the switches would do anything. But if the electrical system was off, the air wouldn't be circulating, and that tiny draft on the small of her back suggested that it was, though perhaps on a standby system. Where had the electrical system controls been? On the left-hand side of the consoles, if she was right side up. Now she could think of that, and how to tell. Below the consoles, a knee-hole space accommodated the person working them. Above was the storage shelf with netting. Her toes wiggled down and found themselves snagged in something tangled. Netting, she hoped. That meant... Her mind struggled. It was surprisingly hard to think upside down in the dark. The lower left console would now be up here. She felt over it slowly. The main lighting control should be about halfway up. Perhaps this big rocker switch? Light stabbed at her. She squinted. She was indeed upside down. Her stomach lurched, and she fought back the nausea. It wasn't really upside down, not in zero G, just relatively upside down. That thought didn't help. Move slowly, Janice had told her repeatedly. Now, as she tried to turn her head and look across the tiny compartment, one foot came unhooked and she lost her grip on the toggle. Don't panic, Janice always said. Just drift if you have to. She drifted, held by her right toes clenched on the shelf's retracted netting. Light was definitely better. She could put up a hand to fend off the stool that tumbled slowly before her. Was that what she'd kicked before? And she could see that what she'd first felt was indeed a length of tubing, perhaps 2 or 3 meters of it. She had no idea what it was for. After a long struggle, she finally twisted and coiled herself into an upright position, with her feet under the consoles. With a firm grip on the edge, she rested and tried to think more clearly. She was, as she'd thought, naked. She saw no sign of a spacesuit, but across the compartment were personnel lockers. Perhaps in there she could find something. Meanwhile, with the lights on, she could identify most of the switches. She pushed displays on, and the smooth screens to either side of the consoles lit up. For a moment, they blurred into fuzzy rainbows as tears rose, but she blinked hard. She could cry later if she had to. For now, first things first. Air. She had air more than 100 hours at present usage. She had electrical power keeping the internal temperature high enough for survival. Calories, in that limited sense. Water? She found none listed, but that didn't mean much. She might find juice in one of the lockers. Slowly, carefully, she worked her way around, checking the lockers. 2 plastic flasks with zero-G nipples full of clear liquid. The first she tried gave her a fiery drop of the same stuff drunk at the party. She grimaced and pinched the nipple shut. The other was water, pleasantly cool. The next locker was half full of concentrate bars, sticky-taped to the racks. Better and better, food as well as water. Brunn alternated sips of water with bites of concentrate. She still didn't know why she was in a pod in zero-G. Was it someone's idea of a joke? A political move? An attempt to use her as a pawn in play against her father, or Harris?
I don't think so.
Brunn felt much better, even without clothes on, now that a bar of concentrate was doing its work in her belly. She looked at the exterior scans again. The miners had explained their reference system. She could locate Xavier, Orison, Blue Eyes, Zadok. Rock blips were supposed to be one color and ship blips another, which meant, if she was right about it, that there were a lot of ships out there. One of them would be the Sweet Delight, and one would be Vigilance, with Kutsudis on scan. Someone should be able to see the pod, if they bothered to look, with the battle over. And there were lots of little blips going by, some of them marked by the scans as thermally active.
Thermally active rocks? Aren't thermally active rocks found in volcanoes?
She'd never heard of volcanoes on anything smaller than a planet. Ahead, a drift of blips slid across the screen, thickening. She was moving too fast, she realized, relative to those rocks. Pods were tough, but not that tough. It took her a few moments to locate the thruster controls and confirm the full fuel tanks. Then she began maneuvering, using short bursts, as she remembered someone telling her, trying to work away from the thickest clumps of blips.